Bernie Williams coming. Let's hear it for Bernie Williams. Very good. Bernie, nice to see you. Marty Lurie here. Adam Copeland.
How are you, Bernie? Good to have you, man. You can take a seat. We'll get you all set up.
All right. We're looking forward to, of course, the Yankees are in town, and Bernie Williams is in town. And just so fans know, we're going to talk about some very serious things in his father's life and things that he wants to let people know about. But just so you know, a little bit of the baseball side of Bernie Williams, and an accomplished musician, a wonderful musician. Marcus Shelby talks about him, and I know my whole family sends me CDs this week. I'm getting CDs, so
the
music is all over the place.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I had an opportunity to, after I retired, about 7 years after, I went to the Manhattan School of Music, and I auditioned, and they accepted me, so I went through the whole jazz program there. Took about 3.5 years, but I just graduated with a jazz performance degree out of the Manhattan School of Music. So I'm another cat looking for a gig.
Yeah, we have Marcus Shelby. I don't know if you know Marcus, but Marcus is the best. He's a composer, jazz musician.
Oh, that's awesome.
A bassist, yeah.
Yeah, and he's been here a number of times with us, and he's always coming up with new ideas, new compositions. So
that is awesome.
We love it. But just to get the baseball out of the way, and see you, and of course the Yankees are here, and I always tell people, I grew up in Brooklyn, you know, I'm a Jackie Robinson, I go back to Ebbets Field, so when I see the Yankees, it doesn't make me feel real good, but but I will tell you, what a career you had, and of course, a World Series champion, and we did our little notes on you, and 2,336 hits, 287 homers, five All-Stars, 1996 ALCS MVP, batting title, Gold Glove, Silver Slugger.
Don't forget the 400 doubles in there too, Marty. Yeah. You got to give them all the accolades.
Oh man, and a lifetime full of memories. Great times playing in New York, and you know, World Series and all that stuff. Yeah, it was an awesome time.
Bernie, when you think back to the Yankees, what made those teams so good? And of course, we got the Hall of Famers. We got everyone like yourself. Sometimes it's like the A's in the early 70s. There were too many of them. Not everyone could get in the Hall of Fame. If you were there alone, you'd be in the Hall of Fame. So what made that team so special?
I think, you know, at that point, you know, we were not thinking about being Hall of Famers or anything like that. I think we were, you know, a whole group of guys putting in the right plays at the right time. We had the glue that kept us together, and our manager, Joe Torre, especially playing in New York, you know, with the media and all the attention and all the distractions. He was a great buffer, you know, between the team and everything that was happening. We had a really tight clubhouse, and none of the players were, you know, this, like, outstanding, you know, standout offensive people. We were like about 20 to 2,500 home runs, 75 to 80 RBIs all across the board. We were a tough out. Everybody in the lineup, for instance, you know, our 1998 World Series MVP was Scott Brosius, and he was hitting ninth in the lineup. So we had a lineup that was very strong. We were put a lot of emphasis in working the pitchers, trying to get into the bullpen, you know, after, you know, between the fifth and the sixth inning. And then if we had a lead after the seventh inning, we have arguably the best bullpen in the game, and arguably, in my mind, the best closer in the history of the game in Mariano Rivera. So that was a great combination for all those years.
Bernie Williams with us on the patio here, Weekends in the Park. Bernie, they talk about when you get to the postseason, like the ghosts of Yankee Stadium, right? You get the monuments behind you. Now your number's hanging up there, 51 retired. You've got a monument out there in the park. What's that like, man, to have your name etched in history with the greats?
Oh my God, it's such a great honor. When you start thinking about all the people that are there and that have been there, you know, as a young player, you kind of look in Monument Park and you wonder, you know, how is your career going to come out, and how is it going to be? And to have my name there is just a great honor, and I'll obviously never take it for granted.
Well, the monuments used to be on the field, you know that.
Yeah,
and Mickey would go out there, and they'd hide a ball behind the monument. So if anyone ever hit it out there, they'd just go grab a ball.
That's right. That was a little bit before my time, but I remember hearing all those stories.
Yeah, the scooter and all that. Well, you have a great legacy, and we're glad to have you here. But you're here for a serious matter that we want to talk to you about, and it's about your dad and his experience with the rare lung disease, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF. Bernie, tell us about it and how it impacted your dad's life, because I know this is something you want to share with the country.
Yes. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, was the disease that took my dad's life away about 15 years ago. It's basically a scarring of the lung tissue. The idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis means that there's no known cause. So we're still researching, trying to look for a cure. We are trying to raise awareness about this disease because the numbers are rising. There's about 132,000 people living with IPF in the United States. About 50,000 people get diagnosed every year. And out of those, 40,000 people die every year from IPF. Wow. The numbers are real, and we are trying to raise awareness about the disease through a campaign called Breathless. We do have a website called breathlessipf.com where people that may think that may have some of those symptoms, which can be confused with other ailments like COPD or asthma or bronchitis, because it's all regarding the respiratory system. But we are encouraging people to try to get as soon as they can, if they find themselves or somebody that they love with those symptoms, shortness of breath, fatigue, tiredness, and difficulty, breathing, so they can get diagnosed or try to get IPF out of their, the diagnosis, because you certainly don't want that. It's a terminal disease.
BreathlessIPF.com is the website where you can find out more information. What's something that you'd like the public to know about this, just in general? I mean, it hit close to home for you.
Yes, my dad was my hero. He was a Superman in our family. He was the one that taught me how to play guitar, taught me how to play baseball. He spent a lot of time. He was an outgoing, kind of go-get kind of person. And it was devastating for us to see him go down that way. It took him, 5 years to get the right diagnosis. And then after that, we had him for three more. But he was bedridden and, had oxygen and, respiratory. It was just really, really hard to see him. But I know that he is looking down. Hopefully being proud of what I'm doing and trying to raise awareness about this disease and, hopefully help some people out with this.
Is there any known cause of contracting it, of how someone gets it?
No. The idiopathic actually means that there is no known cause for the disease. They're still trying to look for, avenues of trying to get some research and trying to get, a known source of the disease so they can, attack it. But now we're just basically dealing with people that have the disease, and trying to manage their quality of life. And there's some alternatives, but nevertheless, there's no cure for it yet.
Boy, Bernie Williams with us talking about the idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF. How did your dad, know it? I know there was a lot of misdiagnosed. Was he misdiagnosed along the way?
He was misdiagnosed for about 5 years.
And
they thought they went through the whole gamut, from a common cold to bronchitis to pneumonia to all the, like maybe asthma. I mean, they said all, and they gave him a medication to cure the symptoms, but nobody really came up with the diagnosis until 5 years later, where it was a little bit too late to do, something significant about, getting his quality of his life, going. So it was devastating. So we're trying to, try to raise awareness about it. I think that, there has been, data supporting the fact that the earlier that people get the diagnosis, they have a better chance to improve the quality of their life have alternatives to treat the disease, while they have it. So it's really, really imperative for people to go out there and try to get to the doctor as soon as they can if they find themselves, with some of those symptoms.
Okay. So breathlessipf.com is the website. How can people help? What can people do once visiting the website?
Well, once you get to the website, you get an opportunity to see and hear from patients. From caregivers, doctors, people that are involved in the fight for this disease and try to eradicate it. So you get a support group. You get people that can listen, that can relate to what you're going through and all of that stuff. So we're certainly encouraging people to go to the website and check it out.
Yeah, and I imagine, you're very passionate about it, and of course you explain it beautifully. And if someone thought about it and wanted to get in touch with you, can they contact you through the website and email and ways
they
to do that?
Contact me, but I'm in the position that I am just, kind of like the messenger. You don't want to shoot the messenger.
Right.
But in any case, I think the people that are in the website are probably the best people that can answer some of these questions that, because I'm not a doctor. You know, I have no...
That's
no
one thing you left out.
Yeah, right? No technical knowledge of the disease, but I have a heart to try to get people to pay attention to it and use my likeness to, you know, help out with this
right.
cause.
Right,
so
right. Good for
yeah,
you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Good for you. Well, let's talk a little ball.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit of what's going on with the Bronx Bombers here, and they've won 10 of 12, 5 of 6 on the road trip. They've taken 2 here. Have you played in this park before?
I was here, but I don't think I've ever played because by the time that I was during the season, the time yeah. that I was playing, I was hurt. I was in a injured list. I guess that's what they call it now.
Not the DL. I still say DL. Yeah,
yeah. To be polite.
I was not able to play, but I had an opportunity to visit the stadium, and it was beautiful. You know, obviously, the first couple of years, that it was just such a great novelty to be here, and especially in downtown San Francisco.
Well, what do you think of the Yankees? Of course, you know what it takes to be the world champion. Do you see this kind of symptoms of your team with this one? I'm very impressed with Aaron Judge as a person. Frankly, and of course, getting Aaron Boone back to manage. What do you see with this team?
Oh, I see a lot of possibilities. I mean, they have been sort of working on this sort of culture in the team from the time Aaron Boone became the manager. You know, hiring the right people, you know, putting a lot of emphasis in the way that the game is played now with all the analytics and all that stuff. They have put together a good team. Unfortunately, or fortunately, if you want any way that you want to look at it, you have like most of the lineup that has been getting hurt.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
So we have all these guys that have been brought from AAA, like guys like Rochella and people like that that are kind of stepping up. And you know, they're taking the team, you know, taking the bull by the horns and putting the team in their backs, and just actually doing a great job, you know, while these guys are not able to play.
Well, you retired not too long ago. I mean, we're to the point now where guys you played with or alongside with Aaron Boone, who, you know, one of the biggest home runs in franchise history, are now managing games, right? Are these guys that you could have seen as managers playing alongside a guy like
Absolutely.
Aaron Boone?
Absolutely. I mean, Aaron Boone, I mean, as you talk about guys like George Girardi and people like that, you could see while they were playing that they had a little bit of an extra gear in their minds when they were, you know, playing, you know, formulating strategies, you know, and thinking, you know, like a manager while they were playing. And it was a great thing to see. And, you know, I had no doubt in my mind that some of these guys were going to have a career either managing or coaching or in the front office somewhere.
Boy, nice to have Bernie Williams with us. And when I see, I just think of the image. I say, let me ask Bernie, what was it like in your heyday facing Pedro Martinez in his heyday?
Oh, my
what
God.
That was
probably the most difficult pitcher that I had to face, bar none. I mean, he had 4 pitches that he could pitch at any time, any count. He had complete control of them. And when he became older, he even became better. He became a pitcher and not a thrower. He had those, you know, 95 to 98 mile an hour fastballs that he just keep, you know, like really tight in his belt. And when he needed to use them, he would use them. Very smart about reading hitters' body language, and very, very, you know, a keen eye for, you know, noticing patterns. And he was probably one of the smartest players that I've ever had, you know, the pleasure or the displeasure to face, if you want to call it that way.
And he wasn't afraid to move you off the plate.
He was not afraid to move people off the plate. I used to try to get in his head, you know, call time out, try to get in his head a little bit. And it was funny because, you know, some of these instances where we were facing each other, we were just kind of like bickering at each other, you know, like vocally. And then, you know, the broadcast booth would say, oh, well, they're almost neighbors. He's from the Dominican Republic. He's Puerto Rican. You know, they're kind of like, you know, they're nice, you know, but we were like, you know, if you step off the plate, I'm going to hit you. And I was like, bring it on. And we have all these great battles, you know, in the heat of the moment. It was just some of the best times that I had playing the game.
Now, the comparisons, I guess, to we were talking center fielders and Mickey Mantle. I mean, you were a switch hitter. Did you have the same approach from both sides of the plate, or did you go up trying to attack different hitters different ways or different pitchers different ways because of the side of the plate you were on?
Well, no, not necessarily. I try to mimic. I was a natural right-handed hitter. You know, from the time that I started in the Little Leagues. And I became a switch hitter in my second year in professional baseball. I was already in the minor leagues.
Wow.
I asked Buck Showalter. He was the manager of the Class A team in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I was coming from a season in winter baseball. And I asked him, can I try the switch hitting thing? Because I was playing wiffle ball with my brother back in Puerto Rico. And he said, well, you're a pro now, so you have to turn around. You have to hit from the left side. So that's the thing that started me hitting from the left side. And I tried it for a year. It was I struggled a lot. And then I just took it as a challenge. This is either going to make me or break me. So I did probably one of the best things that I've ever done in my career, you know, as far as being a hitter. So it was great because when I was going good, they just had to walk me because couldn't put another pitcher on me because I was going to face him from the other side. So it was just a great move in my career, early on in my career.
What do you think all the young players in baseball, the Vladdy watch, which we just went through this week? I was in the Yankee clubhouse Friday night, and eyes were glued on his first at bat. And, you know, his father, of course, the great Hall of Famer. But young players now, Pete Alonso, he texted his manager, Mickey Callaway, says, I want to be in the lineup the next day. Rookies were seen but not heard. It's a different game today with the young people.
It is a different game. That is for sure. And, I mean, I don't know if I agree with all the things that they do. I think, you know, obviously when you have people, you know, commanding those salaries and making all that kind of money, I think, you know, they might just starting to get aware of the fact that, oh, maybe I may have some pull here in this organization. Maybe I can make some decisions, which is totally different from the time that I was playing. It didn't matter how much money I was making. I was like, well, there's obviously somebody that I have to be accountable to. And there's always a manager. And even if I get a total, you know, like popular and famous, nobody's bigger than the game. So that was kind of like the philosophy that we had playing back when I was playing. And I guess it has changed a little bit, you know, nowadays.
You would never text the manager and say, look, I want to be in there or anything.
Text Joe Torre, so put me in the lineup, yeah.
Well, I would try to persuade him different other ways, try to have a good batting practice perhaps, to try to open some eyes.
But you weren't a bat flipper.
No. My thing was shut up and play. That was my mantra, you know, especially in New York. I mean, you could be, you know. And the game was, you know, a little bit different. I think, you know, my approach was, you know, just try to do all your talking on the field and let all the, you know, malarkey, you know, dissipate itself. And, you know, whatever you do on the field is the thing that counts. And just, you know, try to play the game with dignity and respect and play it the right way. And, you know, that was, I mean, I think that was kind of like a common culture in our clubhouse back in the 90s, and I think that's probably one of the reasons we were so successful.
Now, I'm sure it was. Boy, it's great to have you here. I'm glad to have you. But the most important thing is to educate the public about idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, and as Adam said, go to the website and find out about it. And you've taken a lot of time to do it. I know how special your dad was in your life.
Yes, he was.
So to share this with the public, breathlessipf.com is where you go to find out about it. But I could see how important it is for your life. So we're glad to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. Anya, I'm so glad and fortunate to have the opportunity to present my, you know, tell my story to you guys. And thank you so much for indulging me.
Very good. All right, that's the great Bernie Williams right here. Very good. All right, you got some fans here, too.
All right,
that's Bernie Williams. More coming up, KMBR 680, the sports leader.